particular evaluation is of a project that is funded by HRSA, and that's the Magnolia Project. Many of you may recognize that because it has received a great deal of national attention for its interconceptional and preconceptional care program. And the evaluation research, though, was funded by the Centers for Disease Control, and that was through our Institute for Health Policy and Evaluation Research, which is a collaboration between the County Health Department and the University of Florida College of Medicine. What I'd like to do is briefly go over the issue that we were looking at, describe the Magnolia Project very briefly, and then get into the evaluation design, the findings and conclusions, primarily focusing on the findings and conclusions of our outcome evaluation. I'm going to provide some other slides and go through them fairly quickly of some intermediate outcomes evaluation, but that was too underdeveloped to spend much time on at this particular setting. First of all, our infant mortality in Jacksonville, the disparities between blacks and whites is pretty obscene, and although you do see some variation there, some ups and downs, and most recently in 2006, we see some great hope, that, but as we've seen in the past, that we have seen some drops and then it goes back up again. So there is some promise, though, that this trend downward is continuing. A lot of people are very concerned and have been working on this for quite some time. The white infant mortality rates are also not very good, though. I mean, they're bad. It's just that the disparity is just absolutely horrible. As a few people have mentioned, the perinatal periods of risk studies, and essentially this Magnolia Project largely came out of the perinatal periods of risk study, basically showing that a lot of the infant mortality deaths were due to very low birth rate babies, and that essentially the solution to dealing with this is to essentially get women healthier before they become pregnant, and that's the concept of the pre- and interconceptional care. The Magnolia Project is a Healthy Start initiative to improve the health and well-being of women during the childbearing years, particularly for high-risk women living in the inner city area of Jacksonville. It's a very large African-American population. In fact, Jacksonville has the largest African-American population in Florida, proportionally of all the larger cities in Florida. Sometimes it's joked that Jacksonville is the southernmost city in Georgia. No offense to those of you in Georgia, but that does reflect the legacy of the northern Florida, the legacy of slavery and segregation and those types of things that have clearly been a drag in our society on the health and well-being of minority populations. And that's very different than the populations in South Florida. And we've shown that, in effect, with other kinds of data, that North Florida is very much like the Deep South, and the poor health of the Deep South and the Southern Florida is much more like the rest of the country. I'm not going to spend very much time. There has been a lot presented, and there's some written on the Magnolia Project. It has outreach and case findings. Let me just say, though, that its major emphasis is not on clinical care. There is a clinical care component, a very much community-sensitive, culturally-sensitive care, and it deals with some of the issues that other people were talking about, but it's very much centered around kind of the cultural context and not so much giving workers specific skills, but creating a culturally sensitive setting. It's very heavily reliant on case management, risk prevention and reduction, and it also is very community-based, using a community consortium to help to guide its development. This is a little bit of a too detailed slide, but essentially it gives you the idea of the logic model. On the right-hand column are the distal outcomes. That has to do with infant mortality, reduced birth weight, low birth weight babies, reduced sexually transmitted diseases. We also were looking at the concept of the more intermediate objectives that included things like reducing stress, increasing social support, self-efficacy, and some of those types of things. To do those things, we were looking at more of a prospective design, and the more distal outcomes, we were looking at a retrospective secondary data analysis design. That's what I'm going to primarily focus on today. I'll just briefly touch on the more prospective intermediate outcome design. We also, in the evaluation design, in addition to this immediate and intermediate outcomes and this primary focus today on the distal or retrospective outcomes, we also were looking at the intervention process, because when we looked at some of the literature and so on this program, some of what was in design, there was this concept that it was going to be culturally sensitive, and we kind of said, well, that's nice to say, but what does that mean, and is there really something there? So we did some ethnographic observation to confirm, in effect, that this setting was different than other settings. So the process evaluation built on an ongoing quantitative program data collection conducted by the University of North Florida, but we also had this ethnographic data collection that involved direct observations and focus groups with the healthcare providers, the case managers, and the actual people who utilize the services. Prospective study design, that was of the intermediate outcomes. It involved collection of data with people that had entered the program, so we had kind of a pre-data collection, and then they had to be in the program for at least 90 days. Unfortunately, our funding period was such that didn't work out too well, because due to some dissatisfaction with the services being delivered, they revamped the program entirely, and that created a big gap from in recruitment of clients. So that's one of the reasons why I'm not going to present very much on that today. We did use data collection with trained lay health workers, kind of that same concept that a lot of people are using. In this case, we trained them with PDA-type instruments, and so the data was collection on the PDAs, and that reduced that was intended to reduce errors and both the collection of the data and then the recording of the data and then the transmitting the data. The instruments that were selected were developed to collect data on the major psychosocial factors that were that the program was intended to influence. And we did that, we identified those to a large extent by talking to the caseworkers and to the clients as to what this program was doing and how it was accomplishing them. And that presented some challenge that need much more further development. Oops. The retrospective study was primarily secondary data analysis. The program files, the files for people that were enrolled in the program were linked to vital statistics and surveillance data. So because we were a university and a health department, we were actually able to get personally identified sexually transmitted disease data, vital statistics data, and so on. We used comparison groups for both the prospective study and for the retrospective study, so we were able to select comparison groups. The Magnolia case management clients, they were selected based on criteria. Essentially, they had to have meet certain criteria for being high-risk women. We used only those that had completed at least 90 days. We had an N of 206. We started with almost 350, but it turned out that a lot of them really hadn't been in the program that long, and we thought that there had to be at least a minimal dose effect. That 90 days is not a maximum dose effect, obviously, but at least it created some kind of threshold. The comparison groups were based on similar risk factors, and we, to increase our statistical power, we had double the size in the comparison group. We also compared it to two population-based comparison groups, clients from the high-risk zip codes and clients from what we call the Magnolia area. The distal outcome evaluation involved, we were using SAS chi-square and Fisher test for some of the comparisons between pre and post. We also use a general estimating equation to compare the rate of change between the comparison groups and the intervention group. And we use the relative risk analysis to assess proportional differences of infant mortality rates and low birth weights between Magnolia and other groups. The findings related to the process, this is one we did find that they were very differently. The Magnolia Clinic was very definitely different than other health department clinics. Other health department clinics were trying to, they were built around the idea of when you get a woman into the clinic, you kind of, it's a one-touch opportunity, you want to give them everything they can, and so the result was they got to be very large institutional types of clinical settings. There's a certain amount of that may just be government types of healthcare delivery and things like that. We were doing some ethnographic observations of those clinics concurrently when we started this, so then we had the same anthropologists go in and look at the Magnolia Clinic, and there was a huge difference. This, the storefront kind of culture, the beauty parlor kind of environment, was a very personal type of care. Some of those things that were mentioned in the previous type of presentation, a very personal type of care. People felt like they were well received, and they indicated in our through the focus groups that they did feel this way. They did feel a very big difference. So that was one of the things. The program was well received. The other thing is when we look at the data, I mean, it was recruiting extremely high-risk women. The prospective study, we had several measures, perceived stress, goals and future study, general self-efficacy. Unfortunately, our ends are 16, so it's not really worth even talking about. Although there were some promising results, we do want to follow up with this and do some more study of this, but really nothing conclusive at all. Related to the distal outcome evaluation, and this particular slide shows low birth weights. Now, the number of very low birth weights was so small that we really couldn't see much. The numbers were just way too small. But here we saw that the rate of change between the pre and the post was statistically significant for the Magnolia group, but it was not statistically significant for the control. The outcome evaluation also related to the rate of change between for low birth weight for the case management group versus the non-case management group. The control group, that there was a 0.06 level of statistical significance there also. So we were seeing some difference here. If you look at the normal birth weight, it went from 89% to 70% with the Magnolia clients. It went from the normal went from 72% to 83%, whereas the control group stayed pretty much the same, 86 to 83%. So there was a definite increase, and that was statistically significant. Related to infant mortality, here the numbers were extremely small. One of the things was they were trying to delay conception. So you're kind of naturally then going to lower the number of births and hopefully also lower the number of deaths. And so the rate of infant mortality was 81 for the high risk group. 81 is just incredible for the high risk group. So you see, they were really attracting a very high risk group, and it was 35 afterwards, which was comparable to the control group. The control group actually went up some during this period of time, whereas the case management group did not. I'm going to have to kind of probably the sexually transmitted diseases. Also, that was another area that was statistically significant, and there the Magnolia clients had a 78% no STD rate compared to the control group. Just a couple quick conclusions here related to interconceptional care and a few other things. This is not an over conclusive study. The numbers are small. It was one site, one setting, and so on, but it does seem to offer some very important potential to reduce infant mortality, reduce low birth weights, and to reduce STDs. We didn't find a statistically significant increase or any indication of it related to interconceptional care. We did find, though, that there are issues with standardizing the program and clarifying exactly what the program is doing. This was a little bit dependent on the interactions of each case manager and so on, and so clarifying what's working and what isn't working is part of that standardization of what is working, and that's we don't want to come up with the generalizable solution for all prenatal and interconceptional health care, but we do need to have some more standardization. And that balancing of fidelity versus flexibility, tailoring to the community, is a critical issue here. Related to Medicaid, one of the obvious things here is to expand the scope of the role and scope of Medicaid family planning waivers to include pre and interconceptional care, and to expand eligibility to include women with specific risk factors, and to also expand services beyond clinical care. And there's an awful lot of emphasis on this related to women's health in general. If we really want to deal with this issue, we have to improve women's health in general. We can't wait. It would be like, you don't wait to start worrying about a foundation when you're on the second floor of a house. You know, I mean, you have to build the foundation first. And so women need to be healthy before they get pregnant. And that's part of the conclusions here. We also found that we could improve the research design. There are certain things that we need to do, but I'm way out of time, so I'm going to... Oh, I'm good. I don't think I was able to. I never did. I lost a few slides in this. But they're on the paper. Most of you got a copy of that. There's a couple of other extra ones, and I'll go.